Finding the right healthcare partner for your business isn't easy, but Hancock Wellbeing at Work can help. We're a different kind of program that combines employer clinics with a wellness strategy. And in a lot of cases, we can deliver greater health benefits at a lower cost. See why well-being for your employees is well-being for your business at HancockWellbeingAtWork.org.
Hammer and Nigel.
Can you believe these characters are weirdos?
So let's rock it!
My name is Nigel. Jason Hammer is out. My man Brian Baker is in. Brian, good thing there's nothing really going on in the news today. Right,
man. I was looking forward to just having a laid-back day, you know, joking around, and then this breaks last night. I thought, oh, great, now I have to pretend to be smart.
From the New York Times, quote, a Manhattan grand jury voted to indict Donald J. Trump for his role in paying hush money to a porn star. He's the nation's first former president to face criminal charges. The felony indictment filed under seal by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office will likely be announced in the coming days. By then, prosecutors working for the District Attorney, Alvin Bragg, will have asked Mr. Trump to surrender to face arraignment on charges that we don't know what they are for now. So that brings us to our next guest. As long as we're talking about prosecutors and district attorneys, we might as well go to the drivehubler.com hotline and bring on somebody that's been a longtime friend of ours, iconic WIBC broadcaster and current Hamilton County prosecutor, one Mr. Greg Garrison. Prosecutor, how are you?
What up? I'm fine. How you guys doing?
It is a pleasure to have you back on the air with us, sir. So from your perspective as a district attorney, what are you seeing, your general thoughts on what's unfolding in Manhattan right now?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've read what's been printed. I'm still trying to find the felony. Assuming facts, not evidence, that it's true, and Donald was afraid that Stormy was going to talk, so he had his lawyer give her some money. Not a public official. She's not running for office. And I'm still trying to have somebody flesh it out for me how come that's a crime.
Well,
assuming in this she didn't talk, you know.
Well, paying hush money to a mistress is not a crime, correct? I mean, so this essentially is falsification of business paperwork.
Yeah, and I don't. If he did something really stupid, like trying to take it a deduction on his taxes, then Donald, you're on your own. But you could put it in the books as entertainment gone south. That's all you could say, and then keep on moving.
Well, what do you make of? We're speaking with Hamilton County Prosecutor Greg Garrison here. I mean, both the Southern District of New York and Joe Biden's Department of Justice declined to pursue this. Previous district attorneys in Manhattan declined to pursue these charges. It seemed like they passed the statute of limitations. The FEC didn't even fine Donald Trump for this alleged hush money that was paid to Stormy Daniels. What do you make of the fact that the feds passed on these charges?
It's just all you need to hear to know where we're going. Mm. It's just weak. No, I can't even say that. That's barnyard talk.
Oh, you can say it.
It's as weak as it could be. And it's nothing there. Now, what I'm curious about is, from what you've described to me and what I think I know, these charges were not brought in federal court. That they were brought by a, they call them district attorneys, but he was a state prosecutor. Now, if I'm wrong on that, bad on me, but it won't make much difference, I don't think. I've just been poking around, and I haven't been able to convince myself what jurisdiction they're in. I think the problem is very transparent. And, you know, we've even ended up with people that were pretty good-sized enemies of the Donald, who said, well, this is BS, guys. I mean, the governor of Florida just did it. And, you know, Donald's been slapping him around like crazy. He said, this is an abuse of power. Mike did it. Pence did it. And he and Donald didn't end up with hugs and kisses saying goodbye, although I don't speak to him. I don't get to talk to him very often, but my understanding is they're cordial and still talk on occasion.
Yeah, a lot of Republicans have come to the defense of Donald Trump, including how you just mentioned Mike Pence, and DeSantis has said he won't play any part in any sort of extradition. But here's the question. Could Donald Trump even get a fair trial? Should it come to that? Should, you know, a judge, assuming a judge doesn't throw these flimsy charges out, whatever they are, could Donald Trump get a fair trial in Manhattan?
No. Sorry. I could be more controversial, but no. Not just no, but hell no. I mean, he's not going to get any kind of a fair break when you consider the economic and social demography. That's a big, fat concept. Of the people that are going to be in the jury there, I don't know that you could ever trust what was going to happen to you. I mean, I covered O.J. Simpson case for CBS. I worked for them for, I guess, 5 years or so. And one of the things that we looked at with that case, what did he do? I mean, the defense was, they said, well, he was in North Dakota at the time. But the rest of it was going, how do you get around this, that you did this with no facts? Now, O.J. got what he had coming, but what he got, what came to him was he got socked by a civil lawyer, a civil judge, later on, and ended up, got caught trying to strong-arm some guy and did, I don't know, 5 or 10 years is good enough for him. But to focus especially on this moment, I don't know that either Biden or a bunch of those screwballs that work for him, all the woke crowd, or even some of the more moderate Democrats and centrist Republicans, they recognize. I hate this expression, but it's just so appropriate. There's no there. I think it's the interesting thing, and let me get into the weeds only momentarily.
Go for it.
All this stuff that has been heaved at this former president. The Russia connection, which was bourgeois, as I used to say on the air, from end to end. It's nothing. All these things that they built on, attacked on, the Russia connection, the everything else that they could think they could find it in. Of course, the infamous letter alleging that he'd done some pretty naughty things with some girls, all of which was fraudulent because they couldn't prove any of it. Once upon a time, the rule was, and it still is, he who alleges must also prove. And so I don't know whether they can do it or not. I doubt it. I think that they think, they being the Democrat apparatchik and George Soros, who's paying all the bills, they think that they can destroy him by virtue of charging him. They don't have to convict him. Because they can leave the thing pending for a long time. They'd like nothing better than to have this thing hanging over his head all the way to the election. But when you do things for that reason, you've forgotten your oath. You've forgotten rule of law. And you're this visceral, vomitous hatred for this guy is all you got left. I want to like him, and I've met him just once, and he was nice to me and nice to my wife and his wife at the time. It was bad boys. I never had any reason to dislike him because for all of his falderal, kind of his bravado, he did a lot of good stuff. Nobody ever talks about him calling up the Department of Public Works, New York City, and saying, hey, I've been looking at you guys trying to finish this park since Truman was president. Would you just get out of the way? And they did, and he finished it. For all the people of New York, didn't charge the city a thing. So he's got those good sides to him. But nobody wants to, well, nobody on the left side of the equation will
put
any of his barnacles. You know, maybe if you ever heard some of the stuff that Obama said and that blabbering that's coming out of this president's mouth all the time. They'll people over that and won't even talk about it, even though he needs to be gone. He may take
Greg,
care of
let that me, for him, I want to ask you one quick question here, Greg. What kind of a timeline are we looking at in terms of this going to trial? And what happens if Donald Trump runs? Let's say he's actually elected and sworn into office before this case has gone to trial and certainly been decided. What happens then? Because you can't prosecute a sitting president, right?
You're not supposed to. It's very, very rare that any such thing is permitted. I don't think we can even point to one. Over the 250 or so years that we've practiced in law. I don't know. I think he becomes president. What that does for us, though, and this your question is right to the point, they got to do just the right thing. They got to be able to manipulate the entire criminal justice apparatus, I should say, not apparatchik, but apparatus. They got to be able to manipulate that in such a way that they can say, okay, try him Friday. Oh, continuance. He wants discovery. Okay, try him next Friday. And they just push this. It's what they got to have, I think, is they have to have a conviction before the election. Because if this is hanging over his head,
it's
going to make the big cause celeb. It just really is.
We're speaking with Hamilton County Prosecutor Greg Garrison. Prosecutor, thank you so much for your perspective on this. And we miss you over here at WIBC. Thank you for taking the time to break this down for us.
Most of the time, I miss you.
The Hammer and Nigel Show.
Yeah, I'm Nigel. Brian Baker's filling in for Hammer. Earlier, we had on Greg Garrison, longtime WIBC broadcaster, currently the Hamilton County prosecutor, for his perspective on the Trump indictment, which happened late afternoon, early evening yesterday. You said, Brian, that you had maybe something you wanted to circle back around with here.
Well, I just thought this was kind of fascinating, Nigel. Garrison said that really Democrats have to try this case and they have to get a conviction before the November 2024 election. Constitutionally, I mean, in theory, that doesn't really matter because constitutionally, there's nothing that would prevent Trump from still running for office and ultimately winning. A convicted felon can still run for office. So, you know, in theory, I mean, if something like that were to happen and people were angry enough and felt like this was a miscarriage of justice, you could theoretically have a president that is sitting in a jail cell.
What I want to know is what if Trump doesn't decide to go to Manhattan to turn himself in? Like, is that an option? Have they talked about that in his inner circle? Because this is a sham indictment to begin with, just like the January 6th hearings were a sham, just like the Mueller probe was a sham. I mean, I could go on and on and on. I mean, what happens if Trump says, screw you, you're going to have to come get me? And then you have Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, saying, yeah, I'm not going to mess around with any extradition. You know, I'm not going to participate in any way, shape, or form in that.
You know, I don't know if I don't know what would happen and whether that's a possibility or not, but that certainly wouldn't be. That doesn't seem like Trump. I mean, it seems like he's more the guy that is going to come from a position of power and strength and go right up and use this to his advantage. And I mean, we're seeing how it's benefiting him already. Is there any doubt at this point that he's going to be the Republican nominee?
Not at all. And there's some talk now of everybody else to just step aside, because at this point, it's his to lose in terms of being the GOP nominee. And especially when you consider the basis of these charges, when you have hush money being paid to a porn star, Michael Cohen, Trump's disgraced federally prosecuted perjurer lawyer making the payments. Trump saying he had nothing to do with it. There's a letter out there there's a legal letter documenting such. It's just, I was really, truly stunned last night when I heard this, because A, nothing has gone like that we've said it's going to. Trump said he was going to get indicted last Tuesday. Well, it didn't happen until last night. We had heard that the grand jury there in Manhattan was going to take April off, to go on spring break. And then for this to come down last minute is is pretty shocking, and I see nothing. I don't know about you. I see nothing but a witch hunt. This is a...
Well, you know, I mean, most legal analysts have said that this case is flimsy at best. So, obviously, there's a lot we don't know. I mean, there's 34 charges, but I don't see what the win is in this for Bragg, because the majority of people are looking at this and just saying, you know, this is just a political witch hunt. So, you know... Ultimately, this does nothing to benefit him, only harm him. And, you know, I guess from that perspective, I just don't see why he's even bothering with this, because it seems like self-sabotage.
Well, and here's the other thing. Trump is going to want that moment. I think he's going to want that image of a perp walk. They're not going to cuff him, from what I've been reading. And I think he's going to use that mugshot, whatever this mugshot is. He better smile really big for that camera. He's going to use that to his advantage for his campaign. You heard Greg Garrison mention it earlier. They've thrown everything at this guy, from Russian collusion to the Mueller probe to Ukraine to both the impeachments and now this, you know, the illegal unconstitutional raid at Mar-a-Lago. And look, I could see people being upset if it turned out that Trump somehow colluded with Russia to rig the 2016 election. But that wasn't true. We know that was a sham from the beginning. I could see people being upset that Trump advocated for a coup or an overthrow of the government January 6th. But we know that wasn't the case. And now we're supposed to be upset for some weird payment to a porn star that they're trying to twist himself into a pretzel and say that's a campaign violation? I don't get it.
Well, even if it is a campaign violation, I don't know how Bragg can prosecute him for that, because that would be a federal crime and he can only file charges on the state level. So I have no idea what the win is. I'm morbidly curious to see what these charges are that Trump's going to be facing and how his lawyers will respond to it.
All right. We'll be right back. It's a Hammer and Nigel show.
This beat is my recital. I think it's very vital. You rock around. That's right.
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Hello. I'm Nigel. Brian Baker's filling in for Jason Hammer. We'll go to the drivehugo.com hotline and bring on Tommy Pigott, RNC's rapid response director. Tommy, the unprecedented indictment and potential arrest of former U.S. president who is currently running a presidential campaign is pretty unbelievable to me. Your overall assessment on Trump being indicted?
Well, it's completely outrageous. I saw Jonathan Turley, the professor out of George Washington, I believe, tweet out what I think a lot of people were thinking, and he called this a patently political prosecution. And I think any common sense, well-meaning American looking at this knows that's what this is. It's a far-left DA, refuses to enforce the law against violent criminals in New York, using his position to pursue political vengeance against a political opponent. That's exactly what this is, and I think Americans see that for what it is.
Do you think that Trump wants this, Tommy? I mean, you know, the theory is that this can only help him at this point in time, that it's just going to bolster support. We've certainly seen that in the poll numbers. I mean, is this something that Trump wants to see happen, that he's going to leverage to his advantage, or is it something he was hoping to avoid?
Well, I don't think anyone wants the government to be used against them like this. I don't know what the political ramifications will be. I'm sure we'll all find out soon enough. I think there will be a backlash against this DA for being so overtly political. But I think the fact that the government is being so overtly political, that these Democrats and these politicians, these far left politicians, are using their positions in government and weaponizing them against their political opponents, I think should concern everyone. And no one wants to see that. And I think it's also important to put this in the broader context, that this indictment is an outrageous example of a pattern of weaponization from Democrats and Joe Biden against their political opponents, whether that's concerned parents, pro-life Americans, the list goes on and on and on.
And talk a little bit more about the backlash, because I'm thinking this is the high point for the Democrats and the DNC. And I think the mugshot is the high point. And, you know, I think what you're going to see is somewhat of a backlash, kind of like the defund the police movement. There was just a horrific backlash for the Democrats. Turned out to be awful for them. Do you see something like that happening, Tommy?
I do, and I think it's because of that broader context where, again, this is an outrageous example of this DA going after a political opponent, but it's also all those other examples I gave about the Justice Department refusing to investigate attacks on pro-life facilities, parents being targeted by the Justice Department. You have the IRS showing up to a journalist's home as that journalist is testifying before the Weaponization Committee at Congress, and we still have no explanation for why those IRS agents showed up to his home. It's time and time again, example after example. So I think there will be a backlash, a huge amount of Americans saying, we don't want the government being weaponized against political opponents. That should be common sense, but for some reason, the Democrats in D.C. have decided to abandon common sense and use their positions for this raw political power play that I think is going to backfire on them.
So do you not buy the big political theory that Democrats are running with some grand strategy, the strategy being they want Trump to be the nominee because they think he'll be easier to beat in the election than, say, Ron DeSantis?
Well, I think if Democrats were really good at having these types of grand strategies, they'd be better at running the country. I think how terrible they've been doing at running the country shows that they're not really good at that. So I don't necessarily want to get into their heads. I think that's actually kind of a dark place to be sometimes with Democrats. I don't want to speculate on what's going on in their heads. But I what I will say is the Republican nominee for president is going to beat Joe Biden in 2024, flat out.
Mm. We're speaking with Tommy Pigott, RNC Rapid Response Director. A little bit about the Trump indictment. Looks like he's going to be in Manhattan for an arraignment on Tuesday. I think there's one more point that is very strange to me, that both the Southern District of New York and Joe Biden's Department of Justice declined to pursue these same charges. The previous DA, before Bragg, declined to pursue these charges. If I'm not mistaken, when Bragg was a deputy district attorney, he declined to prosecute these misdemeanor charges. The FEC didn't even fine Trump for these quote-unquote campaign violations. What's changed here, Tommy?
Well, I think the politics has changed. Yes. I mean, I'm not a lawyer here, but when attorney after your attorney says there's no there, you start to believe them until you have someone that is bowing to political pressure to pursue this type of political vengeance tour. I think that the politics here is what this DA is reacting to, Alvin Bragg is reacting to.
Absolutely.
So I think that's what's changed, is he's trying to either make a name for himself or he's bowing to political pressure. But I think it's clearly obvious when this DA, by the way, has made a career as DA of Manhattan of turning felonies into misdemeanors, of taking a felony committed by someone and turning it into a misdemeanor. But the one time he goes the other direction is against President Trump, where he literally is resurrecting a zombie case, right, to turn it into a felony. I think anyone looking at that can say this is purely political, and for anyone insisting that it's not, I think is showing themselves not really be honest when they're looking at this.
We're speaking with Tommy Pigott, RNC Rapid Response Director. Let's move now, pivot just a little bit. Something that it was a little bit under the radar, it's something that I'm passionate about, is energy production in the United States and how it's kind of spiraled downward ever since Joe Biden took office. The House just passed H.R. 1, the Lower Energy Costs Act. Talk a little bit about what this is and the response from the Democrats in the Senate.
Well, the Lower Energy Costs Act comes from the commitment to America that Republicans made when they were running, saying that they're going to take action to unleash American energy and lower energy costs. And that's exactly what this bill does through really important permitting reform. And for those listeners that don't know, there's a massive wait, about an average of 5 years for most projects, as these projects are being held up by bureaucrats, basically, that are putting up mountains of red tape. So this permitting reform is essential no matter what energy you want to produce, because you actually have to construct the infrastructure to get it done. That's a major piece of this. Another major piece is making sure that we actually encourage production of energy across the board. We're allowing us to support allies in terms of the exportation of energy to allies so that we can better confront the geopolitical influence of countries like Russia and Venezuela and other places. And it basically says that America is going to be producing our own energy by American workers instead of relying on adversaries that either hate us or have really detrimental environmental standards themselves. So it's a win-win-win. It lowers costs, helps national security, and actually improves the environment. So it's astonishing to me that the House Democrats wouldn't support it. And the only explanation I've seen for their opposition to this act is that somehow it hurts the environment, which again is astonishing because they'd rather energy be produced in countries like Russia, yeah. Saudi Arabia, and Venezuela. How is that helping the environment? It's really mind-boggling to me. So I don't quite get their opposition at all.
Well, and when you look at a president who has really had no legitimate wins thus far in his presidency, this to me seems like a slam dunk in terms of being able to lower energy costs and look like you're actually doing something to help Americans that are just getting crushed under the cost of living right now. And we know so many things are tied to the price of oil. It seems like this could only help Joe Biden to say, listen, we're doing this in the short term, but our goals, we're still going to make investments in clean energy and still move in that direction, but we have to deal with the circumstances that we're dealing with now.
I think that's exactly right. It would be a massive win for him. It would be a massive win for the country, Republicans and everybody, to pass this bill. But I think you just hit the kind of hinted at why he's not when you said it would be a win if he wanted to lower energy costs. I don't think he wants to lower energy costs. I think the higher energy costs is actually a part of his plan to force this transition that he's been trying to thrust on the American people.
Well, yeah, I mean, he campaigned on it. I'm going to get rid of coal. I'm going to get rid of fossil fuels. I mean, that's stuff that has actually come out of the president's mouth, or at the time the vice president campaigning in 2020. And it's, I mean, he's you know, keeping his campaign promise, I guess, so to speak.
Keeping his word.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so yeah, at one moment he would tell a room full of people in San Francisco he wants to ban fracking, and then he would go out and lie about it. So now we're really seeing who he is telling the truth to, and it was that room of people in San Francisco that he wants to ban fracking.
One more thing before we let you go here. Speaking with Tommy Pigott, RNC Rapid Response Director. The White House spokesman, Karine Jean-Pierre, she's either incompetent or just a flat-out liar. She said the other day, that Biden's border policies are, quote, working. 1.3 illegal immigrant gotaways have escaped into the U.S. since Biden took office. Mayorkas, he has refused to say that it is a crisis on the southern border. What exactly is going on in this administration in terms of the border, Tommy?
Well, I think you're right to say both. I think she's incompetent, a liar, and an incompetent liar, because you can see right through her when she's lying. It really is astonishing that they're insisting that the border policies are working. When you mentioned it, 1.3 million gotaways escaping into this country. And you have to just, any person with common sense can think, if someone crosses the border and purposely avoids law enforcement, they do not have good intentions for this country.
No.
I mean, that is just common sense. And 1.3 million people have done that, have crossed the border, escaped into this country under Joe Biden. How anyone can look at that and describe that as anything other than open borders is beyond me, but this administration is dedicated to this lie, dedicated to denial, and I'm thankful there's the House GOP majority, which is going to the border, holding hearings, and also saying, you know, Mayorkas, we're going to hold you accountable, and they're already doing that. That's why these hearings are so important, and I'm thankful that the majority is there.
Find him on Twitter at Tommy Pigott, P-I-G-O-T-T. Tommy, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
It's the Hammer and Nigel
Show. Thanks, Tommy.
Brian Baker filling in for Hambone. By the way, we'll talk to Hammer later. Look, I know he's upset he can't be here. Huge breaking news, and he's down, I think, in Scottsburg watching his son play baseball. We'll get him on a horn later, though. Republican leaders everywhere calling the indictment of former President Trump a political stunt. Here is what Attorney General Todd Rokita had to say, AG of Indiana. Quote, the political establishment using their powers to indict a former president and current political opponent sets a dangerous precedent. The last thing that should ever happen in this country is the prevention of voters to freely decide who their leader should be by weaponizing the system. The left's prosecutors let violent felons out of jail. They refuse to prosecute violent crime and then go after candidates like President Trump to win their political battles. We must stand strong against these types of abuses of power, or they will continue doing it to others less equipped to defend themselves. That's a statement from Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita. And Brian, I mean, that's the other aspect of this. How would you like it? I mean, you're living in New York City. Crime is skyrocketing. This radical leftist prosecutor has reduced felonies to misdemeanors like by 50%. I think the number might be higher. And yet he's working on some campaign finance violation and a hush payments to Stormy Daniels.
Well, I mean, that's the thing to look at, though, Nigel. I don't think it's just an evaluation of this. I mean, less and less people are living in New York because they're so fed up with the way things have been run. So it certainly would be aggravating to me. I'd be outraged. And quite frankly, I think there are a lot of people that are on the left that are outraged by this because crime is affecting everyone and it's out of control in all the major cities, but New York City especially.
And I think this does, as I mentioned earlier, have the potential to blow back, if not already has, in Democrats' faces. I mean, like Tony Katz was saying earlier, be careful what you wish for. I mean, just like the defund the police movement, just like now the weaponization of law and the DOJ and the justice system, and this could blow up in their faces for sure.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to go the way that they were hoping or thinking that it was. And I'll tell you something else, Nigel. I mean, it is, look at the amount of support that has come now since this broke.
I mean, oh my gosh.
Trump's polls are going up, and even for me, I mean, I was so sick of Donald Trump, and I got to tell you, I think there are a lot of folks who, like me, had walked away from Donald Trump, but are so angered by this that they're just going to get out there and they'll support Trump out of spite.
Are you of the mindset that other GOP nominees should get out of Trump's way now? You know what I mean? Well, in terms of running for the GOP nomination for president.
Should they get out of his way? I mean, do I think they should? No, but I also recognize if you're looking at the situation right now, what's the point? Why even bother? I mean, the chances that you're going to be the nominee are pretty slim, so why even put forth the effort?
I want to play some audio for you here real quick. This is Representative Lauren Boebert out of Colorado. She was on some committee. She was grilling a guy on public urination in the nation's capital. And so the internet, this is why I love the internet. They compared her interview to a scene from The Big Lebowski. So I decided to put the two together in a little mashup here.
I am very busy, as I imagine you are.
Did you or did you not decriminalize public urination?
Did I urinate on your rug?
Did you lead the charge to do so?
I just want to understand this. Every time a rug is micturated upon in this fair city, I have to compensate the person?
Do you lead the charge to decriminalize public urination in Washington, D.C.?
I'll ask you again. Did I urinate on your rug?
And you support this? Criminal?
Hello. Do you speak English? Carlo Stead English?
I do.
Yes, yes.
You voted to keep it as a criminal offense.
It's not the issue here.
There you go. Lauren Boebert and the Big Lebowski arguing back and forth. Probably got about 30 seconds left here, Brian. Is Hollywood having some success here lately? You work in the movie industry. You work as a stuntman in Georgia. You work on movie sets. John Wick 4 did very well at the box office last weekend. Just your short assessment of the state of Hollywood and movies right now.
I think they are having some success with, you know, really strong franchises. John Wick is certainly, they'll make as many John Wicks as they possibly can. But on the other hand, I mean, you're seeing the decline with some of these superhero films. Yep. That's starting to drop off. And I've seen a reduction in the amount of production happening down here in Georgia as well. So, I mean, they're having some wins, but they're certainly looking at some areas where they've got to pull back and they're not creating as much content as they were previously.
Lots of audio coming up. Everything you need to know about the indictment of Donald Trump next on the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Hammer and Nigel.
Do you believe these characters are weirdos?
So let's rock!
Hello, my name is Nigel. Hammer is out. My man Brian Baker filling in. Bake, how you doing, buddy?
You know what? I'm doing good, but I forgot how much stamina it takes to get through a four-hour radio program.
Oh, man. Yeah. It ain't like we're laying sheetrock here, all right? You know, you talk to somebody that's somebody just got done roofing a house for 12 hours, heard you say that, and flipped off the radio. Hey, let me ask you, I got a ton of audio here for you. Republican leaders in Congress and other places are all calling the indictment of Trump a political stunt. But you asked a really good question earlier, one of our guests. There's this theory that Dems want Trump to run because they think Biden can beat him in a general election. I think Dems, I don't know if I subscribe to that theory. I think Democrats are scared of Trump. They've been constantly, ever since he came down the escalator in 2015 from Russia to Mueller to Ukraine to those impeachments, I think they're running scared of him. What do you think?
You know, I think you're correct, but I'll tell you what came to mind for me, Nigel. I was just kind of mulling this all over my head today and trying to figure out what is the strategy here for Democrats? Yeah. What is the win? And you know what I thought about is the big controversy years ago between Nancy Kerrigan and Sonia Harding, where Nancy Kerrigan got kneecapped. I thought to myself, you know what? Trump is getting kneecapped here. These are the actions of a political party that knows they can't win because Biden can't run on a record of achievements for the American people. He's a weak candidate after being in office and having so many failures. But Trump can run on a record of accomplishments. So what do you do when you're up against somebody and you're not able to measure up to your competition? You destroy your competition because you're not strong enough to stand on your own. And I think that's what's happening here. Trump is basically getting politically kneecapped.
And Trump needs to highlight this. I think he's going to use the impending mugshot to his advantage. Look what they've been trying to do for me and to you, the American public, from day one. He needs to run on what he accomplished his 4 years, what he plans to do his next 4 years, and he really needs to stay away from the attacks of guys like DeSantis. Really, DeSantis is the only one he's been attacking. Everybody else that's that is announced has really been inconsequential. But if he wants a shot at the general election, I think the GOP is locked up at this point. But the general election, I don't know, if I was his strategist, I'd be like, you know, leave DeSantis out of this and just concentrate on your accomplishments.
Yeah, but for Democrats, I do. I think this is a severe political miscalculation. It's not going to go the way I think that they were thinking it would. And they shouldn't have Trump by now. Everything you throw at him, every angle you take, he always manages to turn it around to his advantage.
Every
and the
time.
Same thing's going to happen. You know what? If there is a mugshot, I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest if Trump starts running campaign ads that feature that mugshot.
Yeah.
He will find a way to use it to his advantage.
Okay. New York grand jury indicting Trump on charges related to hush money paid to Stormy Daniels. The indictment and possible arrest, future arrest of a former U.S. president, truly unprecedented. Here is Missouri Senator Josh Hawley on what this indictment says about his colleagues across the aisle.
What the Democrats are saying is, we will use power against you. You want to elect Donald Trump? You want to have a choice? No, we will use power against you. You want to speak up at a school board meeting? We will use power against you. You want to protest at an abortion clinic? No, we will use power against you. It's the same message. They're just ramping it up.
The weaponization of the law, Brian. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, that's exactly what's happening here.
Eric Trump on Hannity. By the way, I fell asleep on the couch last night. I was addicted to this coverage. I was like, I woke up at 12:45 with drool hanging out of my mouth. I was like sitting up with my legs on the ottoman and my head has got a kink in it now. And one of the things I saw was Eric Trump on Hannity last night and talking about how there is some element of election tampering going on here in part by the district attorney of Manhattan.
When my father is leading by 35% in the polls and they know he's going to be the guy that Joe Biden will ultimately, or whoever the Democrat is going to be, will ultimately run against, guess who they go after?
Yeah, exactly. It's illegal. First of all, it's illegal to block Trump or anybody from being a GOP nominee because of a political witch hunt.
Well, which begs the question, what happens to Bragg in that scenario? Let's say a judge just throws it out, at, you know, and it's seen as election tampering. Let's say Trump's lawyers decide to go after Bragg. I mean, could he be facing charges himself
in this? That's what Jim Jordan wants to get down to the bottom of. And he's asked for documents from the district attorney, and they've so far turned up their noses at him. And even Bragg, I believe, previously as a deputy attorney, looked at these charges and didn't decide to prosecute. You got to remember there were several at the federal level, the Southern District of New York, Biden's Department of Justice all declined to pursue this. So what's changed here is purely political. Donald Trump, they're going to do anything to stop him from running. And this is just the latest in a series of things that they've gone after him for. Go ahead if you had something.
I was just going to say, I'll tell you this much. If this does go to trial, I guess I'm going to have to shell out some money and get cable. And I hope it's televised because I'll be there watching every minute of it. It'll be just must-see TV. Not since the OJ trial has there been a trial that would be as entertaining as this.
Let's move on to the next clip with Lindsey Graham, if you can, Allison. There's a lot of cuss words thrown around on cable news by Republicans last night, which I thought I liked it. Here's some outrage from Senator Lindsey Graham last night on Hannity.
But you need to help this man, Donald J. Trump. They're trying to drain him dry. He spent more money on lawyers than most people spend on campaigns. They're trying to bleed him dry. Donald J. Trump.com. Go tonight. Give the president some money to fight this bullshit. This is going to destroy America. We're going to fight back at the ballot box. We're not going to give in. How does this end, Sean? Trump wins in court, and he wins the election.
Which, Brian, brings us to a regular segment here on the Hammer and Nigel show called Lindsey Graham, Tough Guy.
Lindsey Graham, Tough Guy.
So if you don't like me working to make the world a better place, I don't give a shit.
Lindsey Graham, tough guy.
Oh, man. He does have a habit of going on Fox and dropping curse words. And they have to know that that's going to happen. I think they look forward to it.
Sure. Now, like I mentioned earlier, you know, Republicans are reacting very strongly to this indictment of the former president for the hush money stuff with Stormy Daniels, including one of his opponents for the 2024 election, Vivek Ramaswamy. It's kind of hard to say. It's easy for you to say. Did I get that right, Vivek Ramaswamy? He says the issue is bigger than partisan politics.
Yes, I would like to defeat Donald Trump in this primary and in the election. But I want to do it by convincing every voter to vote for me, because at the end of the day, the American people get to decide who governs this country, not a politicized prosecutor.
There you go. That was from Vivek Ramaswamy, who is running against Donald Trump. He's officially declared he's running for the 2024 election. We've heard from Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who has not declared, but he said he's not going to participate in any sort of extradition nonsense. More on that here in just a few minutes. We'll hit it over to Matt Baird in the WIBC Traffic Center.
Hammer and Nigel presents is.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
Is this anything?
All right, let's rock and roll. Rock and roll.
Brian Baker's filling in for Hammer, ready to play Is This Anything? I got some stories for you.
Yeah, let's do it, man.
We are still keeping, obviously, an eye on the latest with the Donald Trump indictment. He has vowed a no-plea deal. The judge has authorized the prosecutor to make Trump this indictment public. It is currently sealed, but doesn't appear like he is going to be handcuffed. So all the stuff, all the updates coming up, especially at the bottom and top of every hour in the WIBC newsroom, we'll be talking about a bunch today. But let's go to the Hollywood movie industry, something you're familiar with. Again, you're in Georgia. You are a stuntman. You've been on movie sets. What is have you heard about the reputation of one Miss Gwyneth Paltrow? bro.
You know, not from anybody within the industry, but I will say she just annoys me to no end, man. This is the gal, remember, who popularized conscious uncoupling instead of getting divorced. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah, with her husband, the lead singer of Coldplay. Yeah.
Yeah, went on bellyached about how, you know, she's just got so many challenges as a mom because she has to be on set all day. I mean, very much out of touch. And I have to hear that ad. She's the spokesperson for some company that sells these copper gloves. And I hear it every day on my way to work, and it just makes me want to punch my radio. I can't stand it.
Didn't she put her name on that candle that's supposed to smell like her hoo-ha?
Did she? I didn't hear that story.
Yeah, look that one up. Allison, maybe look that one up for us. So Gwyneth Paltrow, she's been in the news. There was this court case. She was found not liable in Utah in this civil trial yesterday. This retired optometrist, his name's Terry Sanderson, alleged that she had crashed into him on a Utah ski slope back in 2016. Here is the verdict.
Has the jury reached a verdict?
Was Gwyneth Paltrow at fault? No. Was Terry Sanderson at fault? Yes. Did Terry Sanderson's fault cause Gwyneth Paltrow's harm? Yes. What percent of the fault do you assign to Terry Sanderson? 100%. Damages. What amount fairly compensates Gwyneth Paltrow for economic damages? $1.
Brian, is this anything?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I guess it's something. I am impressed that she only was going after him for a dollar. You know, I mean, I think I would be rather angry about the whole thing. But
yeah, but how much are those? It made it seem like in this story that this dude has to pay her legal fees, which can't be cheap.
No, that I imagine will be very expensive. I don't think Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, is watching late night television for a good ad for a lawyer.
What movies is Gwyneth Paltrow going to be remembered for? I say Seven with Brad Pitt. And I really am not, up on her career.
I forgot she was even in that, man. I mean, that's how
out of touch
I am with
what's in the box?
Yeah. Oh, man, I remember that. Yeah. Brad Pitt was fantastic. The only movie, you know, maybe here's what it is, man. The only movie that I really remember her being in, other than Iron Man, she did some movie called Sliding Doors years and years ago. And my girlfriend at the time, she made me go and see that movie. And I was in total misery for the entire thing.
Oh, I
so maybe
see.
That's
yeah.
Where the hatred started.
Sliding Doors. Good Lord, she was good in Royal Tenenbaums. I liked her in Royal Tenenbaums.
See,
she was good. And then
there's another one right there. See, I've forgotten about her because she's not the highlight in any of the films that she's done.
She's not bringing me out to the theater by herself. So, okay, here we go. Listen, this is funny. A wife found another woman's checkbook in her husband's car. He swore he had no idea who it was or how it got there. But she was still suspicious, so he put the word out on social media, hoping to find the woman and save his marriage. Here is the plea.
If your name's Jessica and you live in Northern Colorado, I need you to check your voicemail right away because I have your checkbook. My wife thinks we're having an affair. She goes into the center console, and guess what she finds? A checkbook. Not mine and not hers. It's yours, Jessica. I have absolutely no idea how I ended up with your checkbook in a console of my car. So we Google you. You work in the same town I teach in, which is not the same town I live in. Do you see how bad this is looking for me? I need you to just check your voicemail so we can figure out where we somehow crossed paths, or not even we, you and my car, so that I can clear all of this up.
You buying this? Is this anything?
I gotta say, I can hear the frustration in his voice. You know, I don't know whose side I'm on at this point in time.
I think he's full of crap. I mean, there's no other explanation. So there's a second part to this. The other woman, okay, so this other woman with the checkbook saw his his desperate plea on social media. So she contacted him and set the record straight. Check it out.
It's Jessica. I live in Northern Colorado. I never answer my phone.
Hey, we found Jessica. After texting back and forth all morning, the best we can come up with is that our kids go to school together. She maybe parks where I park because I teach next door. It's the best we got. So this afternoon, I'm going to meet up with Jessica, take the whole family over. She has goats. And so we're going to play with them. She's getting her checkbook back. And while half of the 15,000 comments and growing on this post are convinced that I am like the world's greatest infidelity mastermind, sorry to disappoint you guys.
Yeah, Brian, you know, sorry. I'm still not buying it. This random chick's checkbook winds up in your car. How do you think they still don't have an explanation for it?
I don't know. I could see how something like that happens. I mean, you got kids and you're distracted, you know, and I don't know. I could see something like that occurring. But at the same time, I think maybe, you know, the marriage is going to have a lot of work that needs to be done. They've got some repair work to do here because he's going to have a heck of a lot of resentment. And in fairness, it's not as though she found a pair of panties. You know, it was a checkbook. I mean, if she's not giving him the benefit of the doubt to begin with, there's probably some problems there. There's probably a few cracks in the marriage before this happened.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
My name is Nigel. Brian Baker filling in for Hammer. We'll go to the drivehubler.com hotline and bring on Jim Lucas, serving as a member of the Indiana House of Representatives from the 69th District. Representative Lucas, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great.
Look, you've been an outspoken proponent, a supporter of Donald Trump. Just want to get your thoughts and overall assessment of this unprecedented action of the indictment and impending arrest of former U.S. president. It's never happened before. What are your initial thoughts?
It concerns me for the country because just when you thought the Democrats could not sink any lower, they prove us wrong. And I think this sets a very, very dangerous precedent moving forward. The fact that he had to dig as deep and go as low as he had to, Bragg, the DA, yeah, to get those charges when, you know, it had been passed up before several times. Nobody wanted to touch it with a 10-foot pole. You have a lot of your medical, or not medical, but your legal experts out there saying that it's just wrong on both sides of the aisle. So it will be interesting to see how this plays out moving forward. But the precedent set is what concerns me.
You know, I get that, Jim, but from my perspective, really, they've done the GOP a major favor here. I mean, one challenge that we were facing as we go into the 2024 election was that the party was very sharply divided between DeSantis and Trump. I feel like this is not only going to bolster support for not just Trump, but for all Republican candidates, you know, but I think also, you know, they've managed to unify us because everyone is so angry about this that folks that had kind of shunned Trump in the past are coming around to supporting him because this is such an outrage.
I couldn't agree with you more, but never underestimate the capacity of Republicans to screw something up.
Fair enough.
You know, this is a gift for now, and hopefully we can take advantage of it and move forward with it. But I think DeSantis did a great job by staying above the fray and, you know, coming out and publicly stating right off the bat he's not going to cooperate with the feds or with the state of New York. And that right there was a huge sign on his part.
So, Jim, you've campaigned for public office many times. What does this do on a national level for Donald Trump? He's obviously somehow going to use this to his advantage. I don't think anybody would ever say, yeah, I hope I get indicted and I hope I have to do the perp walk and I hope I have to get my mug shot. But Trump has managed at every corner, whether it be Russia, collusion to the Mueller probe, to Ukraine, to the impeachment. He's managed to paint himself as a victim of weaponization of law. What does this mean for his campaign for his run for president?
Oh, I think it does nothing but boosts it. You know, one of the things that I've always admired about Trump, regardless of, sometimes I just wish he'd keep his mouth shut and stop with the personal attacks and focus on policy. That just drives me nuts. But the man will not quit. And, you know, he put in countless hours. He was always, always out there taking on the press, you know, taking answers from the press, unlike Biden. And if you guys remember, and I'll go to the Wayback Machine here, that first preliminary debate they had amongst the Republicans, Trump, in my opinion, did horribly. And they knew it, and they asked one of his sons, I couldn't remember which one it was, Don or Eric, and they said, hey, you know, your father's performance wasn't quite up to speed. Of course, I'm ad-libbing right now. But he said, you know, the one thing about my father, he is the fastest learner of any human being I've ever seen. And that's one thing you can say about Trump. He learns. He seems to learn when it comes to situations like this, and he will work this to his advantage. No mistake.
What are you hearing from your constituents in the 69th district about that? What are their concerns, and how do they feel?
People are just disgusted. I mean, you know, Trump's one of those people, either you like him or you don't. And I'm not going to be so disingenuous to say that everybody down here loves him, but my district did go overwhelmingly for Trump. But I think a lot of people are just getting fed up with the Democrats weaponizing, you know, the rule of law and what they've done with the FBI and the DOJ. You know, their selective enforcement of law is really concerning to a lot of people. And I hear as much talk about that, if not more, than just Trump. It's what's happening with our justice system.
You mentioned it earlier briefly. Maybe you can expand on it just a little bit. What does it say to you that previous prosecutors on a federal level didn't want anything to do with these charges, these payments, these alleged hush money payments to Stormy Daniels from the Southern District of New York to previous Manhattan district attorneys? What does this say about the current district attorney, Alvin Bragg, and his motives?
Well, it just shows how horribly partisan he is. You know, he campaigned on taking out Trump.
Yes.
And that right there, if that doesn't raise red flags, I don't know what will. And the fact that, you know, it's been reported that Soros donated $1 million to his campaign, there's another huge red flag. So it doesn't take a rocket scientist to put things together. But as long as you're willing to, you know, remain intellectually honest and look at the facts and just follow through with those, there's just too many things here that point out an obvious witch hunt.
Jim Lucas, serving as a member of the Indiana House of Representatives from the 69th District, our guest on the DriveHubler.com hotline. You have this bill that you have in the legislature right now, HB 117, the handgun training for teachers. This really, I don't think, especially in the wake of the horrific tragedy that happened in Nashville at a school this week, a very soft target. I don't think this bill couldn't have come at a better time. Reset, Jim, this bill, where it's at, what's the status, and what can we do moving forward?
No, the status is it just got scheduled a hearing this Wednesday at the Senate Education Committee. So it is moving forward. And, you know, sadly, we had another horrible tragedy of a school shooting. And that's just one of those things that's a difficult issue to talk about, but it's where society is right now. Society's broken, and we have broken people in it. And I know, as much as everybody prays and wishes that those things didn't happen, you know, that's something that we have to deal with. And by sticking our heads in the sand and ignoring it and hoping it doesn't happen again, that's not going to solve anything. And when you look at the facts that have come out from previous school shootings, everyone has happened in a gun-free zone. You know, gun-free zones are simply areas where people that obey gun laws are made easy victims for people that don't obey gun laws. And we could, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry, Jim. Please finish your thought.
No, it's and this is what this is. I've been working on this for several years now, and every time it comes up, it seems like something like this. You know, here we had the Nashville, Tennessee. Before that, we saw the horrible chain of events that happened at Uvalde when you had almost 400, you know, local, state, federal officials, heavily armed, stood around for almost an hour and a half as elementary kids were being murdered. Before, you know, Parkland, Florida. When that happened, there was actually a group of students that sued Parkland, Florida, and a federal court ruled that police do not have a duty to protect us. Now, as horrible as that sounds, the Supreme Court has already ruled not once but twice that police do not have a duty to protect us. So that alone right there on the legal side of it tells us that we are on our own. So to continue to leave our schools as soft targets and thinking, you know, that, hey, let's put a school resource officer in everyone. Well, that's not going to solve a problem because we had that at Parkland. We had it at Columbine. And we've seen what happens. You know, that's never a guarantee. And the nice thing about House Bill 1177, it multiplies the deterrent factor because a school resource officer costs about, on average, about $65,000 per person per year in the state of Indiana. Well, for that kind of money, you can train almost 40 staff members to the same level that what a recruit is trained to coming out of the police academy.
Well, and we have case studies, Jim, that we can point to. We know that this works and it's an effective deterrent. There are schools in Texas that arm their teachers. They're permitted to carry. And in fact, they will have a large sign in front. There's one school down there that has a big sign that basically explains, hey, you know, our teachers, we have teachers that are armed and they are trained to engage an active shooter. And I got to tell you, I've never heard of a mass shooting at a gun show, but I do know that the first thing that happens when you get a security system at your house is you put that big sign out front that warns anyone that is intending to break into your place. Hey, listen, you know, we're protected. We've got coverage here. So it seems to me like it would be a phenomenal deterrent. Is it ideal? Do parents want to see that happen? No, but it's the reality of the times that we live in.
Absolutely. And we cannot continue to leave our schools as soft targets because, you know, when things do go down and something like that happens, the first people that get called are people with guns. They're like, hey, you have got to get here as fast as possible. Now, you know, there's video out there of the Nashville shooting where those brave officers, they rushed in. And they went in, but from the initial shot to the final shot was 14 minutes. So stop and think about that. If you're a staff member, you don't know what's going on, but what better incentive to want to, you know, for somebody to at least have the ability to defend themselves. And this is something we have to be realistic about this too. This is no guarantee that these will never happen. But this bill simply wants to give those staff members that volunteer for this, and I want to make this crystal clear, the school corporation has to volunteer for this program. Teachers and staff have to volunteer to go through the training. They will be screened with a psychological evaluation, and then once the training is completed, the state will pay for that, and it's a standardized curriculum that the school corporation can add to if they want to, but it will be on their expense. But at least give these men and women that are out there in these gun-free zones, these soft targets, give them a fighting chance.
And Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, last thing here, and Brian, you mentioned handguns the teachers have in Texas. I mean, there are teachers, there are school districts in this state that have adopted a policy of teachers that have volunteered for armed protection.
Yes.
Right? In this yes. state, so but your bill and your bill is saying where the state is going to pay for training now.
Yes, mine is simply as an incentive because right now under current Indiana law, any school corporation can determine their own carry policy. You know, you can get a school corporation that gets out there and say, hey, if you're not a prohibited person, go ahead and exercise your constitutional rights on school property. That is their call. But this is just an incentive program that the state will pick up and pay for out of their school safety program. And just give them another tool in toolbox and advertise it. I would have put signs all over my campus if I was a school superintendent.
Yes.
You know, we're going to fight back.
All right, Representative Jim Lucas, where can people find out more information on HB 1177 and anything else that you're working on?
To follow all the bills, Indiana has a really nice website, iga.in.gov. You go on there and just kind of play around with it. It has several bars that are pretty self-explanatory. Just click on those and follow the lead, and there you go.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot. Have a good weekend, man.
Nigel, you guys do the same. Brian, have a good one.
Thanks, Jim.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show. Let me throw something at you here real quick, Brian Baker. It's not on the list. I'm just seeing this headline about the movie Rust with Alec Baldwin.
Oh. Yeah.
The first assistant director has been sentenced in the deadly onset shooting. 6 months unsupervised probation as part of a plea deal. David Halls was charged with negligent use of a deadly weapon in connection with the 21 shooting on the Santa Fe set of this Western. Halls had handed a Colt 45 revolver to Alec Baldwin that fired while the actor was practicing a cross draw, striking the victim. What are your thoughts here on this? And is Alec Baldwin going to ever find any culpability here?
Well, I mean, as a producer on the project, he will. But I got to tell you, man, really, a lot of people messed up on that shoot. There were a lot of mistakes that were made. So many people were negligent. But ultimately, it comes down to the armor. And, you know, she had a history of safety issues. And I mean, just the fact that that didn't startle her enough, and some of the, they were having problems, they were having safety issues leading up to this horrible tragedy. So the fact that there was someone in a position of such great authority and power, their armor, and it never frightened her enough, it never startled her enough to step up her game and go, wow, we need to be a little bit more cautious here. It's astounding to me. And I mean, that's someone I think needs to be charged criminally and put in jail.
The armorer, Hannah Gutierrez Reed, charged with two counts of involuntary manslaughter. I believe Baldwin was charged with the same thing. They're both pleading not guilty. I think it's stunning that they're, I believe if I'm reading this correctly, they're continuing to film the movie. Have you heard that?
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, from within the industry, there's a lot of talk that anyone that is going and working on that project is going to be blackballed. People are just disgusted about the whole thing with them going back to work at this point. And you know, you could have that perspective, but you could also say, well, maybe this is a way to honor, you know, the victim. True. By carrying on so that her work can be seen.
Got about 60 seconds left here. Do we want to hear from Stormy Daniels on Twitter and what she thinks of Donald Trump's indictment?
Oh, please.
Because, I mean, this all has to really do with her and the $130,000 payment, the hush money ahead of the 2016 election, and how the district attorney in Manhattan is saying that was somehow a campaign finance violation. I think she got ripped off. She probably could have got a lot more for that non-disclosure agreement.
Poor negotiations.
Yeah, awful, yeah. Quote, thank you to everyone for your support and love. I have so many messages coming in that I can't respond. Also, don't want to spill my champagne. Hashtag Team Stormy. Merch and autograph orders are pouring in, too. Thank you for that as well, but allow a few extra days for shipment. She is using this to promote her merch store. I love it. We'll be back. It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Hammer and Nigel.
Do you believe these characters are weirdos?
So let's rock it!
My name is Nigel. Brian Baker is filling in for Hammer. The Trump indictment came down late afternoon, early evening last night, sealed. We don't know what's in this indictment. The judge has authorized the prosecutor to make this indictment public. So looking like Trump is going to be in Manhattan to be arraigned Tuesday. Of course, this is unprecedented, all having to do with hush money payments to a woman that he had an alleged affair with like 20 years ago. And the indictment of a former U.S. president is currently running as a presidential candidate. Campaign. Again, Brian, unprecedented. Let's go to the drivehubler.com hotline and bring on one Mr. Jason Hammer. I know, Hammer, you were conveying to me via text that you were upset that you couldn't be here today. I will say this, enjoy your son's baseball tournament, because the Trump indictment will be here when you get back. You know what I mean?
Well, Nigel, to add the cherry on top of the sundae here, I'm down in southern Indiana. Beech Grove Baseball Bowl taking on Scottsburg. Guess what? Scottsburg doesn't have a turf field. So all the games have been canceled, and we got hotel rooms for nothing.
So you're not – So wait, hold on. You're not even having the games at all?
No. Oh. Athletic director of Scottsburg said, yeah, our fields are pretty flooded, so sucks to be you guys.
So enjoy the time with your family. So you're going to, what, spend the night in Scottsburg and come home tomorrow?
Yeah, we're going to hit the hotel bar, and I'm just going to embarrass myself in front of the team.
All right, man. So, like, I've got audio here. I'd rather, like, the Jason Whitlock audio on Tucker last night was pretty powerful. I'd kind of, like, rather hear your initial thoughts of what you think about the Trump indictment and when it first came down and everything that's going on. And also, there's news about the Mandalay Bay shooter in Las Vegas and his motives, which you have been for the past few years talking about. But just first, your initial assessment of the indictment.
Well, the timing kind of surprised me here, because if you would have told me a month ago or 2 months ago Trump's going to be indicted, I think we would all say, yeah, probably. It still looks like it's a ridiculous case. It's a political thing more than it is a legal thing, but okay. But all through this week, we kept hearing stories from the New York Times, the New York Post, CNN, Fox News, everybody, that the grand jury was looking to take the rest of the week off, and they might not even get to it until late April. So that was the story that came out. And then, lo and behold, bada bing, bada boom, here comes the indictment on a Thursday evening. So the timing of it really was the thing that surprised me the most.
Look, the thing you and I always have talked about during this whole indictment thing, ever since Trump talked about it here a week and a half ago on social media, hey, look, I'm going to get indicted Tuesday. That never happened. Then we thought they were going on spring break, like you said yesterday. We thought the grand jury was going to convene like in May, and then it all comes down. But the fact that the Southern District of New York, Joe Biden's Department of Justice, previous district attorneys there in Manhattan all declined to pursue this matter. And now you turn around, you have this Soros-funded district attorney, Alvin Bragg, as you call him, Fat Alvin, has decided to move forward with this, screams to me of a political witch hunt.
And I'm wondering what changed from Tuesday, Wednesday into Thursday afternoon. Because if one media outlet was wrong about what was happening with that grand jury, all right, fine, you chalk that up. Sometimes you miss things once in a while. But literally all of them, from Republican-friendly outlets to Democrat-friendly outlets, print, digital, on air, everybody was saying that the grand jury was going to mail it in this week, and they were probably going to reconvene sometime closer to May. All of that got out. And again, this wasn't from, you know, Trump-friendly media outlets. It's like the New York Post and things like that. So I have a lot of questions. I'm wondering what happened with this grand jury from Tuesday and Wednesday to late on Thursday afternoon, early evening, to make them say, all right, now we've got enough. Now we got a ball game. Let's go ahead and indict Donald Trump. What went down?
Hammer, we've got go ahead, Brian. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm curious to see these 34 charges that he's facing because, you know, if I'm Bragg, looking at it just on the surface, I go, there's no way that I'm going to be successful. I'm going to win here. So it'll be fascinating to see what they came up with. And maybe there's some surprises that, you know, will catch us all off guard.
And I'm willing to bet, and you know me, I'm a gambler, I'm a betting man, a lot of these charges are nonsense. Like, I don't know how a lot of these things are felonies to begin with, and we'll see what happens in court. But honestly, Brian, Nige, we've talked about this. It's not even about that. As long as they get that mugshot, they can put on T-shirts, they can put on campaign posters, they can put on billboards. That's all they want. That's all this is about.
Hammer, we got about 3 minutes left. I still can't believe the baseball games got canceled. I'm sorry. I'm trying not to. I feel bad for your son and the team there. So you went all the way down to Scottsburg for nothing. But the news, boy, this is crazy. The FBI is saying that the Mandalay Bay shooter in Las Vegas, who killed 58 people, was angry about how casinos treated him, according to this document dump. A fellow gambler told the FBI that Paddock, his name, was very upset at the way the casinos were treating him and other high rollers, noting that roughly 3 years earlier, casinos had started banning high rollers from certain events, hotels, and even casinos. I know this is something that's been on your radar, Hammer, for a long time. We haven't gotten any answers whatsoever, and I wonder if the FBI took so long to realize this is, you know, they couldn't believe that this could possibly be the only motive. Your thoughts on the Mandalay Bay shooter upset at how the casinos were treating him?
So there's a lot to unpack with this story, and I'm not buying that that's the only reason, because it's really weird to me that the shooter's girlfriend, a woman by the name of Mary Lou Danley, just has dropped off the radar. Like, nobody can find where this woman is. She was originally a big part of trying to figure out the motive. And the first couple of days and weeks of the investigation, okay, she was in, she was out. You could find information on her. She is kind of off the grid now. And the lunatic brother of the shooter, this guy's a cartoon character. He was talking to every single media outlet that would put a camera in his face. He was like the Michael Avenatti of this story, right? And now you haven't heard a word from this guy as well. So it feels like there's a little bit of cover-up going on.
Yep.
But at the same time, I cannot rule out that this guy was such a loon that he felt like the casino was doing him dirty. Because I'm telling you, man, I've worked in the casino industry. I worked in the casino. These high rollers, they feel like they're entitled. They feel like it's the law that if you spend a lot of money, you're going to win a jackpot. And simple math tells you that's not how these things work. You know, there's no trick to the casino. They don't have to screw you over. It's simple math. The house has the advantage. The house usually wins. But these people feel like they spend thousands of dollars. They pump that one-armed bandit that it's the law that they have to win. I have been chewed out, yelled at, cussed at on the casino floor. People thought I had some sort of button to make the slot machines tighter against them. These are the true stories, man. Like, this is the way some of these lunatics think. So I can totally see somebody who's probably not all there to begin with feels like he's being done dirty, and he just ultimately snaps.
Hammer, enjoy the time in Scottsburg. I know the baseball games got canceled. The indictment will be here when you get back. Lots more coverage on the Hammer and Nigel show starting next week, and we still have some very interesting interviews coming up during this show today. Hammer, have a great weekend.
Thanks, buddy.
The Hammer and Nigel Show. My name is Nigel. Brian Baker filling in for Hammer. We're going to switch things up just a little bit, take a break from the Trump coverage to go to the drivehubler.com hotline and bring on Indiana State Public Information Officer Sergeant John Perrine. Sarge, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing well, Nigel. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, well, John, you know, this week has been awful for the community in Nashville after the school shooting and the lives that were lost. The Nashville PD did a tremendous job in their response and taking out the shooter. I was very disappointed. I was actually shocked to learn that the school did not have a school resource officer. I'm not blaming anybody here, but maybe some lives could have been saved had there been a school resource officer on site, but that wasn't the case. I didn't realize that the Indiana State Police offers free programs to schools and churches and other soft, what you would call soft targets, to active shooter events and how to respond to that. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, all the way back in 2013, we recognized that there was a gap. We knew as police officers how we were going to respond to an active shooter event. We also recognized that there was a few minutes it was going to take us to get there. And so we wanted to bridge that gap by teaching, talking about, having good conversations to to the schools, to the churches, the businesses about having a plan, and not a complicated plan, not a complex plan, but just talking about it, leading that conversation so that it can be on the forefront of people's minds. How would you respond if violence finds its way into your facility, and what are your options to survive?
And I will say the school, the Covenant School there in Nashville, the staff seemed to do, as far as the body cam footage was concerned, the staff seemed to be ready. The classes were locked down for the most part. There were sirens blaring. Like, what's the first thing you would tell a church or a school on how to respond to something like this?
Yeah, you know, those things don't just happen by chance. They happen because people had thought about it.
Yes.
They'd planned for it. Because when our bodies go under stress that we might experience during an active shooter event, those new ideas, those new thoughts, that stuff is really hard to process and come up with. So if you've thought about it before, you're more likely to fall into what that plan is that you had. And so, you know, we know that these things work because we study these events, and we see that the locked doors, the increased barriers, the run, hide, fight that we hear, don't learn from the FBI, all those options, those things are working. And it's just important that we talk about it, think about it, and have a plan for it.
So, okay, go back to run, hide, fight. Is that a sort of a philosophy that is incorporated into the Indiana State Police training in this program that you teach to schools?
Yeah, it is. And there's several different acronyms out there that people use for this type of thing. But to simplify it, you have options. And any violent encounter has options. And the option to escape, to get away from the violence, is one of the options. These aren't in order. It's not like you escape first, hide second, fight last. It's you take the information you have available to you, and you exercise the best option to keep yourself safe. And so if you have the option to escape, you have a clear path to safety, you know you can get to safety, then do it. You commit to that option. If you don't have that option to escape, then lock down. You know, you shut and lock the door, barricade it. Anything inside the room that you're in that can be moved is being thrown against the door. Every desk, every table, every chair, doesn't matter how heavy it is or how wide it is, you're making a stack that is going to be very, very difficult to penetrate. And then the option to fight, you find yourself face-to-face with a violent encounter. The other options don't exist. You fight for your life. You fight to survive, and you think about what that fight looks like, and you plan for that.
What would a fight look like if it push came to shove and a guy is walking down the hall and I have nowhere to go and he has a gun and is firing it? What, I mean, just talk a little bit about that option for a second, what you tell people.
Yeah, well, we talk about circles of violence, and what I mean is, we've all heard the old adage of bringing a knife to a gunfight, right? Somebody with a gun has a much larger circle of violence, that the area that they can inflict damage is big with a bullet. If you don't have a gun, your circle is much smaller. So you've got to think of a way that you can get that shooter into your smaller circle by using the element of surprise, by closing distance, by using corners and doorways and hiding spots so that you can get that shooter closer to you if fighting is the option you're going to exercise. But also think about improvised weapons, things that are around you that you don't think about every day as a weapon in a school, in a church, in a business. But plan ahead of time of what are you going to grab in that moment that you have to fight for your life. And those are things that you can think about ahead of time so that if the very, very slim chance that you find yourself in that violent encounter, you're prepared.
Speaking with Sergeant John Perrine, Indiana State Police, you offer free programs to schools and churches and businesses. You spend a lot of time talking about the prevention and the response options for active shooter situations. How does somebody, if they're interested in getting a hold of you and having this conversation and talking about these programs, how do they get a hold of you?
State Police website. Our website, www.in.gov/ISP. If you look under the tab that says resources, it'll say active shooter preparedness. And if you're a business, if you're a church, if you're a school, all of the resources are in there. If you want to schedule a presentation, all it is a couple of emails, and we get that scheduled anywhere in the state.
Do you talk about the fact that if I can only imagine, I don't ever want to imagine having to go through something like this, but if I'm hearing loud gunshots in my building, do you talk about the fact that you probably need to start breathing? You need to do your best to stay calm. I mean, I'm just saying, I'm sure there would probably be some people that would be frozen in their tracks, too terrified to move, John.
Yeah, and we during our presentation, we talk about Cooper's color code, and that is just the five different colors of stress that you may experience, all the way from code white, where you're completely oblivious, to code black, where you're physically and mentally shut down.
Yes.
Being somewhere in between that. And the way that you calm those fears is by having a plan and being confident in your plan. And not everybody's plan is the same. Not everybody's escape ability is the same, or lockdown ability. And so your own individual plan is just as important as your organizational plan. But yeah, if you hear those gunshots, yeah, breathe, communicate. You know, if you're talking, you're breathing. So talk with folks and be thinking about plans. But as you're exercising your option, if your option is to escape, you're still thinking about those others, because that option to escape could go away very quickly. And now you've got to exercise one of the other two options.
It's just I'm glad the Indiana State Police is here and offers this free program, but it's just a shame that we're even talking about having to come up with a plan, isn't it? But it's important to have
horrible
one.
Horrible, Nige. Yeah, you know, you and I are fairly close in age, and I can tell you back when I was in school, this wasn't even on our radar.
Like, nothing.
The idea that the reality of somebody could come into a school and shoot children wasn't even something we would have processed. And that all changed April 20th of 1999 when Columbine High School was attacked. Yeah. And our reality, our world changed forever that day.
So, John, Sergeant John Perrine, Indiana State Police, one more time, where can people go to find out more details?
Yeah, you can get on a search engine, just type in Indiana State Police, come to our website, or you can go to www.in.gov/ISP, and that will take you to an ISP website. You can click on resources, and all of our active shooter information is right under that tab.
Sergeant John Perrine, Indiana State Police, you have a wonderful weekend, my friend. Stay safe, and thank you for all you do. The Hammer and Nigel Show. Brian Baker filling in for Hammer. My name is Nigel. We'll go straight to the Drive, Hubler.com hotline, and bring on John Nolte, Breitbart senior writer. John, there was a bunch of other stuff we were going to talk about in this segment because we booked you at the beginning of the week. Obviously, there's some breaking news that we probably should address here in this opening segment, the Trump indictment. It's sealed. We don't know what's in the indictment. We're thinking it has something to do with that the hush money payments to a woman he had at Trump allegedly had an affair with 20 years ago. So the indictment and arrest of a former U.S. president, Donald Trump, who is currently running a presidential campaign, certainly unprecedented. Have you ever seen a more clear-cut case of prosecutorial abuse and misconduct?
Not to mention election interference.
Yes.
That's unquestionably what it is. And I think people should expect other indictments, not just from this district attorney, but the one in Georgia, and there's another one going on. And this is all about the Democrats setting up a series of tripwires throughout the 2024 campaign to either find a jury that is corrupt enough to convict him before the election. They got plenty of time. Or to just keep this legal issue hanging over him like a black cloud, which, of course, exhausts the voters. That's the whole idea with Trump. It's always been to exhaust the voters with Trump by manufacturing drama around him. I mean, he manufactures enough unnecessary drama himself, but 75% of it comes from these the corrupt media and the corrupt establishment, and this is certainly part of that. But this is just the beginning. I mean, we got a long way to go, and we probably got a bunch more indictments to see.
Is it a winning strategy for the Democrats? Because Trump has said that he believes this will backfire on the Democrats, and I mean, you know, the mugshot is going to be the greatest campaign picture in the history of presidential campaigns. I think Donald Trump on some level maybe wanted this to happen.
I don't know. It's very hard to gauge the electorate now, because the Democrats have gotten so good at gaming the mail voting. So last election, 2022, I expected the Democrats to get walloped.
Yes.
All this drag queen stuff and this grotesque
sexual, transsexual, and chemical castration with the way that they're targeting kids. And that didn't happen. So I don't know how it's going to affect the election. My guess is that Trump would prefer not to be indicted and just to be able to run on the fact that Joe Biden's put us into a recession. But, you know, you never know. Maybe the American people will rise up and say this just can't happen and it shouldn't happen in our country. But I just don't know anymore with the way that they game the system.
We're speaking with senior writer for Breitbart, John Nolte, here on the Hammer and Nigel Show. Can you drill down a little bit more? You mentioned election tampering at the beginning of this conversation. I mean, the Democrats have been saying since 2016 that election was rigged. They're saying he tried to, now they're turning around and sort of doing the same thing, squashing the Hunter Biden laptop from hell story before the 2020 election, working the DNC, working with big tech, and now. And now you have, again, a presidential candidate being indicted, possibly arrested next week and perp walked. Could you just talk a little bit more about the tampering aspect of this?
Yeah, the whole idea here is to destroy his campaign. That's the whole idea. That's all that this is about. And it stirs up their base. Their base is thrilled right now. This is what they've been waiting for. This is their Super Bowl. This is their climax. And this is everything they've been waiting for. So, I mean, Trump can get more votes than any other president, except in the case of Joe Biden, if you believe all those votes were legal, the person he's running against. I mean, he is able to, Trump got more votes than Obama in 2020. Yeah. But Biden beat him in raw votes because Trump stirs up the left. So there's a double-edged sword there. And this is just a way to gin up the base and exhaust the middle. And also, keep in mind, it's also a way to say to voters, what if you cast a vote for him and the jury comes back and convicts him? What if you cast a vote for him and we find a real crime? So that's the whole plot here. And remember, we're dealing with a Democrat Party.
Yes.
That is willing to surgically mutilate children to please their base. We're dealing with a Democrat Party that ran this poor Fetterman guy out there and almost killed him.
Yep.
Just to save a Senate seat. These are not decent human beings anymore. I'm not talking about run-of-the-mill Democrats. I'm talking about the Democrat Party, the politicians. These are monsters. So anything they do to Trump should not be surprising to anyone.
Yeah. Have you seen any? Are there any Democrats that you've seen that maybe aren't coming to Trump's defense, but possibly saying, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, we better pump the brakes here a little bit"? Nothing from
not
that.
One. Not one. No, there's not one out there, and they're not going to. They're terrified to do it.
Did you see what Nancy Pelosi said, John?
Yeah, and that's just, and it just. It's that is exactly what they've become. They have become a banana republic. That is a Stalinist. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was just going to read what Nancy Pelosi tweeted out. The grand jury has acted upon the facts and the law. No one is above the law, and everyone has the right to a trial to prove innocence. No, trials require the government to prove guilt, I'm pretty sure. I read that somewhere, yeah. John.
The whole thing is Stalin. The whole thing is Hitler. You find the man, I'll find the crime. And that's the exact opposite way that our system is supposed to work. You have to find the crime. You don't just pull a guy in and investigate him without any due process and without any just cause, probable cause, which is the situation with Trump, until you find a crime. And that's what they've been doing to Trump, like he said, since he went down that escalator 7 years ago. And it's just grotesque.
What does it say to you that federal prosecutors didn't want anything to do with this? They've been looking at this for years. The Southern District of New York, to the Attorney General, to previous prosecutors, and now this is kind of happening at a state level.
Yeah, and not only that, the FEC didn't even find it.
Right.
So
So there's nothing here. It just tells you how trumped up this is. But this guy, this Soros-funded DA, who's now lying and saying he isn't Soros-funded, the Soros-funded DA, he ran on indicting Trump. I mean, that's how broken this is. And then, you know, the next tripwire, there's going to be a trial. So what happens in the trial? Who's the jury going to be? We all know who the jury's going to be. So they know what they're doing, and they're willing to do it. But like I said, you're talking about a party that is willing to mutilate children. That's how depraved they've become. So none of this is surprising.
And you're also,
nothing they're not willing to do.
You're also talking about a party that is the district attorney, at the very least, twisting himself into a pretzel to stretch out the statute of limitations on this crime, 7 years. I mean, like, he's trying to turn it from a local state level misdemeanor to a felony.
Right, and there's no felony here. I mean, John Edwards didn't get convicted, for crying out loud. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. But when the Democrat Party is now a party where they see morality as whatever gets them what they want, to them that's moral. So there's nothing, like I said, there's nothing that they won't do. There's no sin they won't commit. There's no child they won't mutilate to get one more vote to hold on to power.
Senior writer John Nolte here on the Hammer and Nigel Show. By the way, John, this time of the hour here on our show, we call it Beer Sample Friday. I don't know if you're a drinker or not, but we sample a beer live on the show. So while we have this, I'm just gonna crack a beer open here, and we are sampling Backwoods Bastard from Founders Brewery in Michigan, and we're all brought to you by Thompson Furniture and Mattress in Columbus. So if you don't mind, I'm going to sip on one of these. And the article you wrote earlier this week, or maybe even late last week, is how the public health establishment got another aspect of COVID wrong, and that was the disinfecting, the hand sanitizer. Can you just talk about that piece you wrote for a second while I sip on this beer?
It's just one more thing they told us to do that did more harm than good. And that was, we were told to constantly sanitize the kitchen counters, sanitize the bathroom, sanitize the groceries. And number one, it doesn't do anything to stop the spread of an airborne virus. And number two, the chemicals do more harm than good because you're constantly inhaling them as you're cleaning them. So add that to the fact that the vaccine does not stop the spread of COVID. It does not stop you from getting COVID. It certainly can help older people if they catch it. Sure. Becomes more mild. But it's just one more thing. The lockdowns were useless. Closing the schools was a total disaster. All these things we did, and yet this Fauci guy is still hailed as some sort of a god. And it just tells you how broken and how in denial the left are, and how in denial the media are, that they can do this much damage. It's not just that they got it wrong. Look at the damage they did to our kids.
Yes.
By closing these schools and by putting them in masks. And now we learn the masks weren't any good. So the whole thing, it's just, they got everything wrong. And you'd think that they got everything right when you look at the corporate media. It's really something to watch.
I mean, what were some of the more lockdowns and keeping kids out of school aside, what were some of the more ridiculous sort of implementation of COVID restrictions that you saw? Whether it be, we recommend you wear a mask while you eat, but pull it down when you take a bite, or the plexiglass that is actually hindering and tampering with filtration and circulation, or the arbitrary 6 feet social distancing.
Yeah, I mean, I had a doctor who described to me, he said, wearing a mask to stop COVID is like putting up a chain link fence to stop mosquitoes. And that's, and this was a doctor that I saw all throughout the whole COVID thing. And he never put on a mask. He said, I'm not going to wear it. It's stupid. You can wear a mask. And then I was wearing a mask because I didn't know. And my wife has health problems and I wasn't going to take a chance.
Sure.
But there got to a point.
point where we had a mask mandate in my town, and I refused to wear a mask. If someone asked me, I put it on because I didn't want to cause a problem to some clerk. But I just wouldn't wear the mask because it was just stupid. Everything they did was dumb. Everything they did was meant to destroy Trump. Everything, you know, they were willing to do all that damage, especially to kids. The Democrats have become total monsters.
What should Trump jettison Fauci?
Yeah. They tied him up in knots because they had the science on one side and they had common sense on the other, and they just tied him up in knots. But I still think the biggest mistake Trump made during all of that was those endless news conferences that he gave, and that was just him.
Oh, yeah.
Destroying himself. Those were just he should have just stayed in the Oval Office, let his people handle it. But yes, this was all about destroying Trump, and it worked. It almost didn't work. He came pretty close to winning, but for the most part, that's what it was about. And they were willing to destroy our economy and our kids to do it.
John Nolte could sit here and talk to you commercial free for like an hour, man. You're one of the best, and I hope you'll come back on the program here.
Anytime. Thanks so much for asking me.